This is part 4 of a 4-part series. Quote, "They did it for the money, pure and simple," end quote. Al-Zabala says, quote, "They were doing it for financial gain," end quote. A deputy warden says, quote, "They never had a problem with getting volunteers. The inmates needed the money," end quote. The fact that, according to the test subjects themselves, the pure motivation was money indicates that the inmates at Holmesburg were easily manipulated to take part in tests that could permanently damage them. Kligman hired a photographer to take pictures of those inmates with severe reactions to skin tests. The photographer, Al Butler, said, quote, "Everything was done as cheaply as they could. They were just preying on people. Using an inmate was cheaper than buying a chimpanzee, and the results were better," end quote. Raymond Crawford, a prisoner, said that he avoided the tests because, quote, "People were taking advantage of a bad situation. We didn't know anything about what they were testing. It just wasn't worth the chance," end quote. Crawford had no idea how those experiments that happened over a day, a week, a month, or 3 months would end up affecting people in the long run. In fact, almost all inmates agree that whoever was submitted to a test had no idea what chemical they were being tested with. Thomas Sims remembers signing release forms and was never told what chemicals they were giving him. Withers Pond says he signed a release form acknowledging that he had been paid and who his next of kin were, but the release did not describe what he was being tested with or for. Ron Keenan says the doctors never explained the possible painful side effects of the tests, although blisters from even the less dangerous tests were painful, and many men were left with blistered and scarred bodies. Keenan says that the experiments were quite painful, but he needed the money. Alex Gunin knew that the inmates had no idea what they were being exposed to because the researchers didn't tell them. Prisoners weren't told what the tests were for or potential long-term side effects. After seeing some of the experiments, Alex asked himself, quote, "Who gave them the power to take over the prison?" end quote. The superintendent of prisons agreed. The tests were always represented to the inmates as being benign, simple operations that would benefit science and the inmates themselves. He says that many of the prisoners couldn't read, and those who could, quote, had about a third-grade level of reading comprehension, couldn't understand the consent forms, end quote. Dr. Sigmund Weitzman says that the releases could be overly technical, to the point that he didn't even understand them, so obviously no rational, informed consent was being given to the prisoners. As he recalls, inmates were never told about what they were being exposed to, just that it was a commercial product being tested for sensitivity. When the U.S. Army became involved in testing prisoners, they made it very clear they withheld informed consent, saying, quote, "We did not tell them the name of the compound to avoid bias and maintain secrecy. If some subjects did get delirious on the tests and had higher reactions than we expected, we backed off, because we were not prepared for serious reactions," end quote. The prisoners were more concerned with the $25 they would get at the end of the month, and not with the short or long-term effects on their bodies. Withers Pond says, quote, "Hell, I needed the money. Every day I went over to H Block to see if they could use me," end quote. Rick Mancini, who participated in a pill test, biopsy test, and toothpaste tests, has scars on his forearm and back and says, quote, "I wouldn't do it now. I know better. As you get older, you get wiser," end quote. Other inmates agree. Quote, "To look back at it now, it was an atrocity. We never knew what they were using on us," end quote. There was no voluntary informed consent. People with very few options, where they might make 25 cents a day, were offered better pay to put their health at risk, ultimately in service of the scientific recognition and financial wealth of Albert Kligman and the many universities and cities that were contracted to test chemicals on people that didn't understand what was happening. And other abuses came to light after reports of rape by inmates of Philadelphia prisons was confirmed by prison officials, who said that, quote, virtually every slightly built young man committed by the courts is sexually approached. Many of these young men are repeatedly raped by gangs of inmates. Others seek protection, end quote. Since inmates were used as lab assistants at the Holmesburg prison, they had the opportunity to use their privileged position to victimize others. Stanley Randall, a short-term inmate, was employed by the experimental team at Holmesburg Prison as a research assistant, and was able to choose both who was in various tests and who was to be his cellmate. Randall chose new, young inmates to house with him for a few months to a year, and offered them money via the less dangerous Holmesburg tests in exchange for sex. Randall took advantage of at least 6 prisoners. Guards who saw the activity and knew what was happening claimed they had been instructed not to interfere in the affairs of inmates. Investigators looking into the Holmesburg prison tests and the facilitated atrocities said that the degrading and desperate conditions in the jail resulted in the trading of human bodies for money, and made, quote, any claim of voluntary participation by prisoners in human experimentation a cruel hoax, end quote. Leotis Jones, a prisoner at the hearing, said that he had been infected by some type of germ from India in his arm, which got infected and began to swell up, but then he was released from prison before the experiment was over, and was released with an infected arm and no medical supervision or compensation. Jones argues, quote, these people go into it blind. They don't know nothing about nothing. Those who conducted the test don't know nothing about nothing. These are just experiments, end quote. To corroborate the impression that the tests were largely non-therapeutic, Albert Kligman testified that the, quote, inmate studies had 2 purposes. 1, commercial studies for profit. And 2, medical research with no commercial implications, end quote. Making it clear that the claims of scientific progress were largely appended to the experiments in a way to justify the distress to the prisoners and the large profits made by universities, prisons, cities, and Kligman himself. For every experiment, the prison would be paid 20% of the money from each grant, which would quickly be forwarded to the city's treasury. There was a review board that was required to approve each experiment at various prisons. Each review application paid board members $5 a signature. Board members later interviewed cannot remember a single meeting over the years they were on the committee. Just that, quote, 20 to 30 protocols would come in batches and the checks would come from Ivy Research, end quote. Cecil Smith recalled that, quote, the committee was set up to deflect criticism, end quote. A minister was on one of these independent review boards, or IRBs, of medical and civilian overseers, and was surprised when he started receiving checks for hundreds of dollars to pay for his signatures. Quote, we were left to our own devices with no guidance or direction. When the checks arrived, it really raised my suspicions, end quote. In 1974, amid public outcry, the Holmesburg trials were ended, although much of what happened cannot be scrutinized today because Kligman had many of the records destroyed. But there was still opportunity to be had. Tretinoin was a useful chemical with many side effects, one of which was the removal of wrinkles, and Kligman knew that particular effect would fatten his wallet. A memo written in 1983 was uncovered by an FDA investigation that proposed a Retin-A launch prior to FDA approval. Albert Kligman launched a marketing campaign with the pharmaceutical company Ortho, a subsidiary of Johnson & Johnson, to disseminate and popularize Retin-A before having to take it to the FDA. The campaign was successful, and more than $1 million of Retin-A cream was being sold every day. Kligman had developed these creams on the University of Pennsylvania's campus, in its laboratories, using its scientific equipment, and the university was not sharing in the profit, so they sued Kligman. Although under investigation by the FDA and the suit by UPenn, the successful product remained on the market, and many creams incorporating the main ingredient, tretinoin, have been marketed and sold ever since as anti-wrinkle, anti-aging solutions. A few months into the FDA investigation, Ortho shredded as many documents as they could find related to their publicity campaign of Retin-A. Kligman settled with the University of Pennsylvania out of court, and everyone started making even more money. The FDA tried to pin them down in court, but with full backing by pharmaceutical profit, some technically approved uses of Retin-A, and without any of the destroyed documents, prosecution was difficult, and the verdict was not guilty. As Kligman discussed, quote, "We say to them, you're important. We need you. Once this is established, these guys will knock their brains out to please you. I feel almost like a scoundrel, like Machiavelli, because of what I can do to them." End quote. Since Kligman had virtually no oversight and the rights of prisoners weren't much of a civil rights issue until the late 1970s, the city and prison system had no written records of the experiments, and all the documents created by the program under Kligman's administration were destroyed by Kligman after more than a decade of ducking around federal regulations. When newspaper articles were published about dioxin experiments at Holmesburg, U.S. veterans reported similar symptoms, and public protests coincided to condemn human experimentation. Kligman's program shut down in 1974. And then, 2 years later, the director of the Bureau of Prisons, Norman Carlson, announced the end of medical research on federal prisoners. After that, state after state voluntarily shut down large-scale inmate experimentation programs. The FDA, in the late 1980s, declared that clinical investigations for research purposes, quote, "may not involve prisoners as subjects," end quote, which can be amended by a state if the state thinks that minimal damage will come to the prisoners, or if the treatment could help the prisoner. Prisoners tested under Kligman still suffer from pain, scarring, blisters, cysts, and rashes today, and experiments on prisoners continue today. Kligman continued work as an honored dermatologist for the rest of his life, popular and scientifically lauded, and even had university positions named after him at the University of Pennsylvania. The lectureship named after Kligman at the University of Pennsylvania was discontinued as of 2021 as a result of his unethical treatment of prisoners. Hopefully, it won't take authorities and universities 50 years to begin to cut ties with such irresponsible scientists and inhumane research should this happen again. Which, of course, it will. In fact, many prisons are still trying to quietly experiment on their prisoners 50 years later. In 2006 and 2008, a drug company contracted 5 states to divert drug court participants into a study administering 3 different drugs, none of which are federally approved for use in addiction treatment. At least one participant in this program died. Experimentation continues, and atrocities happen all the time. Florida has lifted a ban on inmate experimentation for HIV-positive prisoners. There are 10 times more American prisoners today than there were when Kligman finished his experiments. And every time a state finds a way to avoid FDA and other federal regulations and experiments on this vulnerable and marginalized population, every inmate is at risk of being denied their basic human rights. Kligman himself summarized and excused his casual abuse of human rights well by saying, quote, "My use of paid prisoners as research subjects in the 1950s and 1960s was in keeping with this nation's standard protocol for conducting scientific investigations at that time," end quote. Kligman is not right, but he is correct. That is the American standard. Finding someone who is in need, and rather than offering a fair, sensible, or reasonable exchange, offering the marginalized subject a minimal amount of resources in exchange for the maximum amount of service you can receive, and using their effort and assistance to stand taller on their shoulders. That is the most dangerous aspect of the American way. Profit above else. It isn't evil, but it isn't balanced.